All lines are now bridged.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the ICAT task force meeting. Of the task force members that have signed in already, we have Cheryl Turney, Alex Goss, our co-chairs, Alexis Snyder, Andy Truscott, Anil Jain, Denise Webb, Ram Sriram, Rich Landon, Sasha Termott, and Tom Mason. Are there any others that have joined either by phone or Adobe?
Jocelyn Keegan is here.
Yes. Gus and Jocelyn, anyone else?
This is Steve Brown. Did you get me?
Yep. I got you now. Anyone else? Okay. With that, I'll turn to our co-chairs to get us started.
Well, good afternoon. This is Alex Goss. I believe we're going to have an action-packed day of discussion. We have updates from our data classes work group and the ideal state and guiding principles work group. We're going to be talking a lot around those opportunity areas today. We also want to make sure that we have a quick level set from last week's meeting, provide an update from our high-tech presentation last week, and then wrap up with our usual next steps and public comment opportunities. With that said, if we could go to the next slide, that'd be great. And one more. I'm going to lead you off before handing it over to Cheryl to talk about the high-tech update, to give you a little bit of context about what we covered at our last meeting. The American Medical Association presented a very robust presentation in a very condensed manner. We were very grateful for all of the insights that they offered us to us from their prior authorization surveys, putting a human face on prior authorization, refreshing us on their consensus statement aspects, and really giving us a tremendous visual related to this idea of the layers of the cake and how we might think about our work moving forward as we extrapolate our discussions from the prior authorization exemplar to the larger conversation of the intersection of clinical and administrative data, and gave us some really good thoughts around that from an analogy of a layers of a cake model. So that was produced a lot of robust discussion among the membership, which brought us up to the public comment period and the ability to then wrap up the session with talking about the planned presentation to the full HITAC on the last Wednesday, and some questions that we were thinking of delivering to the HITAC to prompt discussion after our update of the task force's effort over the last couple of months. That input from the membership was tremendously helpful and enabled us to, after the call on Tuesday, reflect on the input and revise the series of questions and how we presented them to HITAC. And it was a really good session, but without further ado, would you like to take us into that update? Cheryl.
Yes. So thank you, Alex. We did make a presentation to HITAC about our progress to date, which seemed to go over very well. We got a lot of input in HITAC, which we expected and were happy to hear about. There were some recurring themes. Ken mentioned a number of things about the inability of clinical systems to be able to integrate with the administrative data. Clem brought up some issues related to the lack of standards that exist in the administrative data, which I think I pointed out myself in this framework when we discussed it, where, you know, simple things even like weights and measures are not consistent from various sources. John Kansky brought up, you know, the consideration that we definitely need to include the role of HIEs in the work that we're doing. And then Arian brought up the topic of the current state of portals that are not integrated, which I think is alignment with what Ken had brought up. And then Sasha, she made a note about the standard coding and, you know, indicating that having more I don't think it's a lack of standards, but even within the standards, an example that's been used multiple times is for pharmacy, where you have Loinc and you have SNOMED, you still have some labs reporting in one, some in the other, and so then some amount of data normalization has to occur before the receiving systems can actually utilize that data, and then in many cases have to translate it so that it's common, and they, you know, can sort of not communicate with one another, but, you know, sort of have that same view where you're not distorting the view of what was intended. And so a number of other comments came up. There was Jonathan brought up the point about, you know, making sure that we get the data right, and had some examples of some initiatives that are going on in other venues where they talk about normalization, et cetera. And so there was quite a bit of chat on that as well. It sort of resulted in a recommendation that I have now documented for this group, that we potentially think about recommending a federal health data model that basically incorporates both clinical and administrative data within it and is utilized to help inform priorities, standards, certifications, et cetera, even the, some of the work done in the USCDI that encompasses both clinical administrative data. Because today, you know, from a payer perspective, I can speak to this, you know, intimately. We share a lot of data with many provider systems. That data is not actionable in their receiving systems. In many cases, it's spun off to an analytics engine, and it's not available at the patient level. So if we're really looking for data to be interoperable, that data needs to be actionable. And, you know, having been a board member of Care Quality all of last year, one of the biggest challenges we were trying to resolve for was to make a response to an administrative query, actionable instead of being required instead of optional. And, you know, to this day, it's still not a requirement in that trusted exchange framework. So some of those things we need to solve if we're going to solve for the greater question of improving the prior auths with our ideal state, et cetera. So we're going to talk about that a little bit more, not right now. There's a lot of other work that we need to do today, but I just want you all to be aware of that because something to that we need to consider and discuss as we go forward in the future. Alex, back to you.
Well, thank you. I did think it was a great opportunity for us to check in with HITACH. We got some good feedback and some additional insights, which will be weaving into our body of work over the summer. We will today, as I noted, be taking a deeper dive. We'll be returning to our deep dive work on data classes and ideal state and guiding principles. Now, we've had a handful of folks who've been doing some offline work. In addition to the data classes and the ideal state guiding principles work group, we will be launching, as I noted at the very end of our call last week, actually we had run over, and I made a brief reference to that we will be forming a privacy and security small group to help build out those two areas within the ideal state and guiding principles. So Jackie Munson and I will be facilitating that group. We've set up three calls, done an outreach to ask a couple people if they would come play with us on those calls, and we're getting some traction. Looking for hopefully a few others to still accept those invitations, and that will occur between now and the early part of June. Today's discussions are rather important in that they're going to help us as co-chairs figure out kind of refined next steps, in the sense that we have had some really fabulous demonstrations and discussions over the last couple of calls to really help elevate our thinking and the potential areas for where we take prior authorization. So we need to sort of bundle up that prior authorization focus, we need to extrapolate it to thinking about the larger intersection conversation, and we need to start building on that recommendation that Cheryl, the first one in the hopper, so to speak, to really help us vet other input that we've received and craft a series of conversations around the recommendations for prior authorization and the intersection as a whole, or intersection of clinical administrative data as a whole. So I want to propose that we ask if there are any questions on all of the updates that we've just delivered in the last 10 minutes, and before we then turn it over to Cheryl and Josh to walk us through the work of the data classes group. Okay, so I'm not seeing any hands pop up.
I didn't either.
Okay, so propose that you take us away. Cheryl, Josh.
Thank you. I am going to turn it over to Josh, actually, and I think he's going to share the current visual. I don't have the information to share directly because I haven't been involved with working with the group, and I apologize for that, Alex. I've just been really triple booked in my day job. But I think the data class work definitely has matured as you guys have been working on the ideal state and the guiding principles. And so, you know, this current diagram, I think, gives a much better view of what the data classes are that we're talking about. And I think, too, if we consider the idea of a data model behind it, you know, we can then look at that and say, how could that help us even better inform our efforts here? So, Josh, why don't you go ahead and provide a brief update?
Sure. Thanks, Cheryl. So I think to both Cheryl's and Alex's points, as a work group, we've been thinking through, you know, at what point do we consider the work that we've been doing complete for purposes of driving recommendations to the ONC. And I think between a combination of the meetings that we've had to discuss the topic, as well as the overall positive feedback we've received on these calls for the work that's been completed thus far, in the absence of any kind of remaining questions or loose ends that seem to need to be tied up, I think we wanted to kind of pivot today and talk about potential next steps for where we could go from here. So just as kind of a recap for where we've been over the last few weeks, we've created essentially a heat map of sorts that helps to lay out the environment that we're working in and the different standards that are at play, the different levels of adoption and maturity across all of them from the different independent sources we've been able to glean. And so we've gotten to a point where we feel like there is a kind of a foundational shared knowledge about the state of the union for these standards and their adoption and their use in the real world. And so from here, I think we wanted to talk about a couple of options for how we could take this work to kind of the next level, thinking about that ultimate goal of driving our recommendations as a group. And so there's kind of two ideas that I'll throw out here for the group to discuss, and then I would also lean to Jocelyn and Rom, who have been instrumental in this work, to help make sure there's any color commentary that needs to be added, that they do so. So there's the two paths that we see as potential opportunities from here would be, one, doing essentially a secondary inventory of not just the standards and the data classes that we've discussed, but also the different constituents throughout the process and their particular data needs at different points in a given life cycle of a prior auth request, for instance. So the way that could look is we've kind of sketched out a couple of columns. If you're looking at the table, over to the right-hand side, trying to delineate between providers, payers, pharmacy benefit managers, EHRs, and other intermediaries that we could potentially label as having different data needs at different points in a workflow. I think we're a little bit divided on how value added this might be at this juncture, just because of the second option that I'll throw out, and that it might kill two birds with one stone. So I'll kind of leave that there for a second and pick up with our second option of how to proceed forward. So the other idea, and this has been mentioned a couple times on recent calls we've had as a group, that we started out with this notion of mapping out the ideal workflow and using that as sort of a guiding light to help us work toward the ideal state. And then we kind of had this discussion about, well, how much of this is cart before the horse, and should we maybe revert to, just inventorying what the data needs we have in the first place. And so I think what that caused us to do is we've kind of started from two different ends of the spectrum, and then ultimately we're getting to a point where I think they're kind of converging in the middle. So what I mean by that is now I think we've established some foundational ideas about the ideal workflow. We've also established some kind of rules of engagement for what data we think needs to be in scope for the prior auth process. And we may now be getting to a point where we can switch gears and move back to trying to draw pictures of the ideal state and tie that to what our data needs are. And we think this will help us both visualize the process better and account for nuances in the workflow, as well as really start to sketch out who needs data at what point in time, what is the most efficient manner to get it to them. Because looking at standards from the angle of, do they cover the data is one angle. There's an entirely different question about, do they move the data to the right person or entity at the right point in the process? So we think that might be a good way to kind of slice and dice what other gaps we might have that could help drive recommendations at this juncture. And it might be that that's an extension of the work of our work group, or it might be that the task force teams, we might want to spin up a new group and potentially pass the baton, so to say, to others that can help visualize, as I'm sure there's a lot of different ways to think about this. So so those are kind of my high level spiels about the two different paths we've discussed. First before questions and comments, Jocelyn and Rob, anything you guys want to add?
Yeah, I think Jocelyn has her hand.
Oh,
go ahead, Rob.
I was going to say, Josh, I think you did a great job of walking through sort of our conversation and where we've come from. There's one point that I would point out for this group. I think that the roles are important, but I think to Josh's point, we need to put them in motion. But as we were discussing sort of gaps in sort of having some philosophical discussions sort of about where to head from here, Ron made a couple comments that triggered some of those early discussions we were having about workflow that made me realize that I just added some commentary sort of in that A merge cell that's off to the left-hand side is, I think it's really important as we go through this process that we acknowledge that multiple parties are doing the PA over and over again as the patient moves through a care journey, and that we can't stop just with the PA being approved. Because often much of the dysfunction around PA or the problem things that create waste around the PA happen when somebody's presenting for payment or payment decisions or determinations are being made. So we added this line item but didn't add any sort of categories to it, because I think we need to walk through these different scenarios to be able to really understand sort of this idea of the service or the episode is done. To be able to make sure that we fully deal with the entire workflow And we had really been keeping sort of dispense or payment out of our earlier conversations. That's where I think sort of shifting towards this, you know, UML or sort of drawn out picture view of the patient or the journey of the PA, I think will be really important to be able to flesh out other things like that, that until you sort of put it in motion, it doesn't really call itself out. Great job, Josh.
Thank you for that, Josh. Can I ask one question, Josh? Under the data class patient generated, is that a patient generated input?
That's a good question. So we have left this category for patient generated data in the table since one of our earliest conversations as a broader task force about the different data needs. So this was brought up, I don't remember specifically who brought it up. I think it may have been mentioned by a couple of different people. But I think we haven't had a real focused notion of what exactly that data might be and whether or not it would be truly a need for the process or potentially an area where there might be some opportunity for innovation and improvement. But we did not find really anything meaningful in any of the standards that we looked at that would help provide an opportunity for patients to share data throughout the process. So,
Josh, I can jump in.
I just wanted to make sure that we're
also looking into the future, because with all what's happening right now in terms of this is a patient-centric view that is now the patient, him or her, is going to sometimes may need to get the PA directly when you're talking about patient being the center of the universe here. So it's just a thought. So that's why we left it there for the future. And you can see, especially with the telemedicine and those kinds of things, you know, the patient is going to play a big role in all these things.
I think this is a really important point from the conversation we had. Josh, do we have, I don't have the document open on my screen right now. Do we have sort of our brain dump around the different types? Because what type of procedure you're trying to get a PA on to, I think will drive how much the patient's specific data is driving it. But Ron brought up this really powerful point around today, PA is essentially a provider-payer-driven activity. But in the future, getting that patient involved in the process could be really powerful and really change sort of how it works overall.
Right, and it is important, because I was going to say the originally why we added that one was because they were talking about the wheelchairs. And in some cases, justifying the wheelchair to have to perform certain activities has resulted from the work that the person does. So I just want to make sure that we're saying here that it's still a requirement, but right now we've noticed that there's no standards that support it. So one of the things I think is we need to have definitions for all of the data classes to help us. We're going to need that in the paper anyway. And is that something that the team can help to expound on in the next week or so? Because I do think that that's going to be helpful for everybody who's understanding, who's not dealing with this on a daily basis.
I think that that's a really good point. Josh, I feel like we could take a stab at that. I don't know, Ron, what do you guys think that we could?
Yeah, we could.
I'd like to jump in just for a second. I mean, so where are the patients? So I think we're admixing a bunch of stuff here. And the reason it feels sloppy is because we're admixing a bunch of stuff. So is there a standard for patient-generated data? Well, I mean, patient-generated data typically may be, you know, signs, symptoms, observations, these sorts of things for which there are standards, right? And the issue is that it's the provenance of the data is what you're really trying to separate out an entire class by provenance, right? I mean, you might want signs and symptoms and observations from the provider, right? So the reason you're not finding it is because it's not really its own class, right? It's a bit of metadata about the origin of that data. So I'm also seeing a bunch of admixed stuff here. Like, we're talking about information models, right, sort of, but no one's really saying it. We're talking about data models and data types. And the other thing, and process. And these are different things. So to get anywhere, you need to tease them apart and apply the right kind of modeling to it, right? So, and then you can make progress by separating the layers of the types of modeling deliberately, like deliberate separation of layers, and then you can get somewhere doing this. Otherwise, you're going to go around and around and say, like, why are there no standards for patient-generated data and all that stuff? So usually when we do this, there's process models, information models, mm-hmm. and data models. There's been a ton of work, lots of work in surely information models. I know you guys must be familiar with, like, the FIM, Federal Health Information Model.
You raised some good points. In fact, those are some of the things that we're discussing. There are, you know, in terms of the data model, the process model, the workflow model, however you want to look at it. So these are the things that one needs to cover. We have to build a scenario and we have to build those models, but we have not delved into that. Because that's, I think one of the things which Jocelyn and I and Josh, when we are talking about, we thought maybe ONC is going to do that. Okay. Because that involves some work.
Okay, great. We just wanted to confirm, you know, for everyone, and we're going to capture that, Stephen, and take a look at that, you know, federal health data model that you talked about. Well, we're going to raise our hands, and I'll help direct the conversation based on the order in which people have raised their hands. So thank you for those comments, and Jim, you're next.
Yeah, thank you. Two quick comments. One is the discussion around the patient-generated had to do with our early workflows where it was around durable medical equipment, where the patient, you know, ends up getting a wheelchair but needed the pillow or needed that there was some refinement, not only to justify the prior auth, but to refine what was delivered. And there were mm-hmm. lots of examples from people on that mini work group of their own personal life where there was a need. So, and then the second thing is we talked about how this is iterative and that, you know, there's multiple cycles for the very same issue because it's denied, then they have to do it again, right? And I'm wondering, you know, even as a hospital group or even in the clinic, is there enough in our data classes that addresses not just the benefits coverage, but what the rules actually are for any particular item that would need approval? So sometimes, you know, people are in the dark, they know what data elements they have to deliver, but then they just get a rejection back. And so on the front end, I think a lot of our discussions were, where is it in our data class here that the rules might be exposed so that people understand in a machine understandable way what they need and why? And then secondly, when there's a PA response, that is a denial or request for more info, there's a lack of granularity of data as to exactly why it was not given approval. And I don't know if that's in the PA justification, that if we go deeper, those two pieces will come out, or if it's a data, it's something we need to be deliberate about at the class level.
Yeah, I think we did.
Knitter in the dark. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I agree with you, Jim. We did say that we needed to incorporate the PA rules, if you will, and regarding the when a PA is required and then what the rules are for submitting data regarding a PA. So if we don't have them there, I know that's something that we did say we were going to include. So that's one that we probably will need to include. And then we also said there might be PA data requirements. And one of the questions we asked was, you know, is it possible that all payers, you know, require the same data? So at least for the providers, it's consistent, even if their decisions regarding the PAs might be different. So we broke it down to what are the PA requirements, what are the PA rules, and then what are the PA data requirements? And those three things probably would need to be, you know, added.
And I think that that's the front end. The other thing that I know we experience is when a denial occurs, there's a generic reason, and and there's an inability to learn. There's not enough granularity as to what shortcoming, what was missing with the rule. So that's sort of the front end is expose the rules and why you need what. The back end is, okay, it was denied. Tell us a little more so that we can improve our documentation or not submit that anymore. I don't know if that's I think there's a distinction there. Because that's how you reduce the rework. That's how you reduce having, you know, two or three or four cycles before you pull the slot machine arm enough times, finally you win the approval. This may reduce that.
Yep. Okay. And then PA feedback. Because the other thing we talked about is the gold carding, and if that's going to be based on history with a provider, then, you know, if you have a provider that's 99% of the time is everything is approved, then it might be trust and verify instead of, you know, prior auth in advance. So that would need to be part of the feedback loop too, so that you understand where you stand regarding your PA decisions.
Yeah, and I would vote that it be a class, these things, so that it's not buried under, you know, I would just submit for consideration that we're overt about it being a row in here, O2.
Yeah. All right. Any other questions or comments?
Cheryl, this is my hand raised.
Go ahead.
Yes.
I'm sorry, we're not hearing you, Alex.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, now we can hear you. You muted yourself out or something.
And when the granularity of
unfortunately, Alex, most of what you're saying is not coming in. I don't know if it's, you know,
back.
I think she said she may try to dial back in.
Okay. Well, in the meantime, Steve, you have a question. Let's move to you right now.
Sure. What if I were to offer a time-limited engagement of some experts who can do process modeling, and somebody offers an SME to take on one process, a small one, where we could actually deliver an exemplar process model so you guys can see what it looks like and what sort of capabilities and opportunities it would present?
Ramya, personally, I think it's a great idea. What do you think, Justin and Josh?
I just stopped myself from typing pick me into the inbox, the little messaging box. That'd be great. I think even, I would say, Steve, maybe just loop that person into our conversations because we've got a pretty good rapport going with the three of us. And I think we could bang out, I would propose actually maybe we do one that from the pharmacy side and we do one from the medical side to sort of hammer out what the model actually needs to cover.
I mean, I can't give unlimited resources. I'm wondering if I have a couple of real experts. I sent you the list of the BPM Plus. If I were to say I can give you, let's say, 20 hours of somebody that knows how to do this modeling work and time boxes.
Hey, it's Jim. It's Jim here. A simple medicine one might be inpatient obs versus inpatient status because there's not a lot of complexity workflow-wise, just for consideration. If we did the med approval and then an inpatient medical services for obs and inpatient, that might be simple.
Yeah. What do other folks think? Those sound good. I mean, with the one we have is the wheelchair example, and this would then get us into the medical and the pharmacy. So we do a med and we do an inpatient.
This is Gus Taurasi. I'll jump in on the inpatient versus OVS. That's not so easy, but very, very, very popular. Lots of controversy around that. So it would be a good one to tackle.
Totally agree.
What I'll offer you, I think, is, you know, the first pill is free, and I'm not going to promise that anything that will be, you know, final and beautiful and difficult and solve the world. But what I will say is you can get some example of it so you guys can see a workable approaches to squaring this stuff away. And then from there, you know, we could decide, you know, do you want to do more of them? Do you like this or whatever? But it might be a way to get something tangible rather than abstract. We can actually look at the model and see how the models step through things and how they link to data flows and decision-making, various types of decision-making and all that, where you can then know it tied everything together in a much more usable way. And so I'm not going to say we're going to do all the work because it's a lot of, you know, it's a huge number of workflows and all that, but if someone wants to volunteer to be the subject matter expert, I'll get someone who can drive the model intervals. And
we've done stuff. A bunch of around the medical, just to offer up, unless others do, we've done a bunch of work on that already, and also with Da Vinci a little bit. So, you know, happy to help as service as a SME on the medical hospital side if wanted.
And
is that Jim
Taurasi? I can be an expert.
Jim
Jurgis on the insurer side. Sorry.
Is that Jim that's talking? If you guys can just say
Jim
who Jurgis. You are when you jump in.
Oh, yeah.
Not
sorry,
everybody knows speaking.
That was me talking about the inpatient med. We'd be happy to help because we've done a lot of work on that area. So for purposes of demonstrating what you're talking about, we're happy to help.
Okay, so.
Hey, Cheryl, this is Alex. I just wanted to let you know that I'm back on the call.
Thank you.
You're
couple
welcome.
Things. Alex Snyder had something to offer up. I want her to be able to speak. And then I wanted to just do a recap for you, Alex Goss. So, Alex
Thank you.
Snyder, go ahead.
Okay, so first of all, my name is Alexis, just to make that clear. I'm not even sure where I want to jump in at this point. I had so many comments on the way, but people just kept jumping in and speaking that the entire meeting. So I think at this point I was going to offer up, and Alex, if you can jump in with what we've been working on in the smaller group for the guiding principles and ideal state. We have been talking about, like we had done early on with the model in the DME and the wheelchair, what does it look like? What is the ideal path on patient side, the patient-centered piece of what does the ideal path look like to get from the beginning of the end and not get that denial and lessen the burden for all players involved? And so I think that, you know, I would offer up from our group, and Alex, again, if you want to chime in, that we've been discussing in various, you know, offline meetings week after week and where that piece plays in and which models we want to use. And I think our meeting yesterday, we talked about having already visited that wheelchair piece, but made, you know, more notes in our tabs about that. Discussing a model around pharmacy as well as medical. And so that was my comment. Now, my comment earlier, I think a couple people had jumped in and chimed in on what I was already going to say. The patient-generated tab came originally from one of the first task force meetings when folks on the patient and caregiver side that are not part of the meeting today had brought up where is there a place for patient-generated justification and attachments. And so not just getting a justification letter from a primary or specialist for need, but where can the patient speak for themselves and really say, hey, this is what I need and this is why, because it's not always so clear. So I just wanted to clarify that piece as well.
Thank you, Alexis. Go ahead, Alex.
Thank you, Cheryl. Alexis, since I missed a bit of the back and forth, it's a little hard for me to chime in, but I can contribute that while I was hearing Josh and Jocelyn and Ram give an update on their options and considerations, I felt like, wow, it's going to be interesting when we get to our guiding principles and ideal state discussion, because there's a lot of similar threads in the conversation between the two groups. And so I think what I've been hearing is that there's this real, we do, between yesterday's small group discussion and what I'm picking up here today, is that we do need to evolve the flavors of the use cases to beyond the initial thought around the DME wheelchair. And to Jocelyn's earlier point, if we get a visual model, it may help us identify the other flavors of considerations that we may be missing in the body of work. And so I think there's some value there into taking the next step, but I don't want to be too short-sighted in my comments, considering that Cheryl wants to also give a little bit of recap so that I'm back on everybody's page in what I missed with my technical issues.
No worries. I think it's a natural transition now to go to the ideal state and, provide that update. I mean, we started those small groups just so everyone on this team knows so we could move things further more quickly. And also, it's only been really through the small group effort that we've gotten people to work at generating input to the workbook. So if anybody is, wanting to participate in that, all you need to do is let Alex or I know, and we will make sure that you are included. But just to sum up where we are right now with the one update we've gotten so far, is that there does look like we need to add definitions to the data classes, and that we have some additional requirements that need to be included in some data class that has to do with PA requirements, rules, data requirements for decision making, and then a feedback loop. So we do need to include something like that. Gus offered up that he would potentially be able to make available about 20 hours of a process model's time if we can identify a SME, and the suggestion was to create an inpatient prior auth as well as a medical, medication approval, which are two that we don't currently have documented. For those people that are on the team, just to as a reference, the patient generated identified back in the wheelchair example, and we do have a process model for that that is available as part of our artifacts that are out on the ICAD website under the ONC listing for our meeting. And in that, we did define that there's a number of reasons. Alexis Snyder was kind enough to recap those. That came out in those original meetings to define that their patient-generated information is very important, but I do think it's important to note that today there's no standard that's anywhere being developed that captures that information. So that's something that we might want to think about in our recommendations when we go forward. All right, I think that's the recap, and I'm going to turn it over to you, Alex.
It was Steve Brown that volunteered 20 hours of someone to help with process modeling.
I'm sorry. Thank you for that correction, Steve. Thank you.
Awesome. All right. So, boy, a lot going on today. It sounds like we've got some great work to take the next step for the small work group team on the data classes. Thank you to Steve Brown for getting some support and some resources to that. It looks like you're also looking for some guidance on who's going to sort of connect you with the next layer. So hopefully we can make sure to follow up on that chat box request. I'm going to now, hopefully with the assistance of Alexis, Anil, Arian and Tom Mason give you an update on the guiding principles and future state work that we've been doing. If for those of you who have been out on the workbook, you may notice that there is now the Guiding Principles tab was renamed Work Zone, and a new Guiding Principles tab, an ideal state, was created. What happened was yesterday we tag-teamed in cleaning up the work and producing the Word document that we sent out to you along with today's materials so that you would have something separate that you could look at and that I'll display in a moment. One of the things that I wanted to sort of just kind of backdrop what we're about to show with is that the small working group has been meeting weekly for about 90 minutes in addition to our regular task force meetings. They have done a great job in synthesizing feedback that was offered into the other considerations tab and the recommendations tab, which was work that Cheryl did to take third-party input to the full HITAC and consolidate that information from the last 6 months and put that into a couple of tabs for us to look at. Further, we had already done some work within this task force to early on in our meetings to capture some guiding principles and ideal state. And we have looked at a number of artifacts from our compendium, such as the AMA consensus statement, the WEDI white paper. We've also added in a few other things. I'm sorry, I should add one more in there that's really critical, which is the ONC burden report. We also factored into the considerations the principles for upgrading a HIPAA transaction standard. Those of you who've hung around me a lot know that I like to quote 162.940 on a regular basis because it is the 10 principles against which we need to measure any future modifications or adoption of standards under the HIPAA realm. So what the work I'm trying to get at to sum up for you is that we have iterated to the point where we're able to produce the summary document for some discussions today. And I'm going to go ahead and share, hopefully, what's coming through as the Word document. I can no longer see the panels. I can no longer see raised hands. So hopefully you're all seeing the guiding principles. So I need someone first to tell me that.
Yes, we are, Alex.
Thank you. I also want to clarify that Cheryl will be monitoring the raised hand feature to help with taking questions. But before I'm going to take questions, I would like the opportunity to sort of summarize this high-level categories that we've put together and offer it up to the small work group members to provide some initial commentary, and then we can start to walk through the document in the time we have available, which is about 20 to 30 minutes or so, maybe less. Okay. With that set up, there are 60-some rows of considerations in the workbook, which we have distilled down to this 5-page working document that reflects principles and future state aspects related to the following categories: patient at the center, measurable and significant improvement, continuous improvement, real-time data capture and workflow automation, transparency, security and privacy protecting, design for the future while solving needs today, aligned to national standards, and the other bucket of uncategorized, but still want to capture it. We have a variety of points that are made for each one of these items. Most of them have at least one, if not have multiples. And these reflect a combination of the ideal state and guiding principles. I'm thinking that as we get through these somewhat today, but more especially through your offline ability to comment on this and send us your input, that we would have the opportunity to improve this body of work and then synthesize it into a clear vision Once we have a clear vision of really what this means, along with the data classes and modeling work that we've just discussed, that we can then start to really figure out where we're at today, knowing where we want to go to next week, and what are the steps from here to next week that we need to take to help the industry as a whole move forward. And those could become part of our recommendations path. In addition, I think that there will be an additional body of work that we will need to go through, which is to consider how these categories or summary statements apply not just to prior authorization, but how they meet our larger intersection need. With that, I would like to see if there are any comments before I start going through the document from the rest of the small group.
No one with their hand raised at this time.
Arian, did you want to offer any input as the framing of these categories, since you did the yeoman's lift on that?
No, it was more just this is the first pass bucketing of the copious kind of detailed commentary that we did, and it's really about how do we elevate all of the commentary to a set of summary items, and would really appreciate treat this as draft, and would really appreciate feedback on whether we've got the right buckets, whether there's additional combination that we can do. And then maybe the last comment is, you know, in the taxonomy world, there are lumpers and splitters, and I tend to be a lumper and other people tend to be splitters. So it may be, maybe you get in there and you believe that there's two categories where I've made one, and some other people may be more aggressive lumpers and may believe there's one category rather than two. But at the end of the day, we want to create something that's easy for the full, the two federal advisory committees that we mutually represent to consume and comprehend, with a couple of, you know, layers down that people can descend to get all the detail and the nuance that we've provided behind this documentation.
Thank you. Helpful. Any other comments,
Alex,
from the small work group? Yes, Cheryl.
Sorry, we do have a question now. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Denise Webb.
Hi, thanks. Maybe you're going to cover this, but on the second and third bullet in the summary, both talking about improvement, is there a particular reason that those are separate rather than just being measurable, significant, and continuous improvement?
Yeah.
And that would be one question.
This is Arian. So think about this. Think about the third category. Maybe a better term for the third category is a learning health, you know, what used to be called a learning health system. But, you know, the point here is the second one is we want to make a meaningful and significant swing at the EPA problem. And the third bullet is that, and sort of related also to design for the future we'll start against today, is we want to make sure that the data and information that we're flowing off this off of EPA drives continuous improvement. So as an example, there was a lot of discussion about when do we consider EPA requirements to be topped out in the sense of meaningful use or promoting interoperability requirements, where there's been enough work driving the activity upstream that you no longer need the gating check downstream. So that's really what that's
intended. That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. The only other comment I had is, I mean, maybe this is common for other people, but on the security and privacy, privacy protecting just sounds awkward to me rather than protecting privacy. Just a suggestion.
And as I said, it might be better. To go provide additional. This was literally a reconciliation that we did last night and this morning. So please treat this as a first pass at this, and something that really would warrant lots of good offline activity to do editing.
And to build on that comment, Denise, I'm really grateful that you're willing to join the small working group for privacy and security, because we can add tweaking that title as the starting point.
Sounds good. Thanks.
I commiserate with the – I got what it meant, but I wasn't sure it was resonating as well as I want, and that's great that this is just a first draft. Any other comments or raised hands, Cheryl?
Not at this time, Al.
Okay, so Anil, Alexis, or Tom, anything else before I start walking through? I'm going to kind of walk through each one of these very quickly, but before I do that, any additional commentary?
Yeah, this is Anil. I'll just say that I think it's, you know, Arian, thank you so much for summarizing all this, and Alex for presenting this. It's really hard to go and summarize all the conversations we've been having into these high-level points. And I would agree with Arian that when the broader group gives feedback, it's in the context of the details behind it that I think we are most interested in. So this is a nice high-level summary, organized summary, but it still needs a little bit of work, as we'll find out.
Okay. Here, I'm going to go ahead and just jump in. So the patient at the center is about reducing the burden on the patient, being the go-between or the driver, ties into some of the cost transparency to the extent possible, with clinician-patient shared decision-making of treatment options, self-pay restrictions are accounted for, and recognizing that that particular aspect may get expanded upon by the privacy and security group. Jackie Munson and I talked about self-pay and the rules related to that as something that we wanted to consider within that group. So that may get morphed on its own, but still looking for feedback if you have some. And the final patient at the center consideration are related to the tools that exist for all those patients, and we want to make sure that we're overcoming the digital divide, access, and socioeconomic and literacy barriers that we know to exist today that add to the complication of prior authorization. I'm going to continue to walk through these in sort of a conversational style. So Cheryl and others, you just need to stop me as we're going because we're at 4 o'clock and I know that we're supposed to wrap up here in like the next 5 or 10 minutes.
You're good to go. No hand raised.
From a measurable and significant improvement perspective, it is important to us that we actually, this time is different. We've been talking about prior authorization, and I know I've got a thorn in my side about how many more times do we need to talk about attachments and prior authorizations till we finally get something to happen in the landscape that makes a difference in the daily world. And so we want what we do in this task force to have a measurable impact. Prior authorization, process reform, and improvements will be driven by patient safety, evidence-based medicine, and reduced burden. It would be nice if 95% of the prior authorizations have a clear and unambiguous approval, kind of getting back to that earlier conversation about the code values that get returned. And we think that we probably need to revisit the metrics when we get to the point of having some recommendations so that we have something much more concrete in this section and that those metrics could be patient, payer, provider related metrics. They might even need to be vendor metrics. Not sure. Something for us to think about as we move forward. As we discussed earlier, there's this continuous learning process bucket about really having the ongoing learning system that as we look to the horizon, how will we make sure that we're continually improving the process that we would have significantly improved by the work of this task force being, and the resulting recommendations being implemented. From a real-time data capture and workflow automation perspective, this is a pretty robust one, so it's not going to be quite as easy to summarize as I have the other ones. But when we look at the aspect of what happens and where it happens and by whom it happens in the actual care delivery process, there's a lot of aspects that we need to address. And so the first one is that we want to routinely collect all or nearly all the data needed during the ordering steps. Can we get to an 80-20 rule approach that's supported by clinical decision aspects to help us with managing the prior authorization? And that may take consideration of avoiding the redundant or separate systems that are involved in trying to perform a prior authorization. And regardless of the venue of care, the prior authorization process mechanically should be similar for both the clinician and the patient, regardless of the health plan, since patients move across the healthcare ecosystem and providers should not be burdened with disparate workflows depending on their venue. Because a doctor may work as a solo practitioner one day and might work at an urgent care the next day and might be working rounds in a hospital the next week. We want to support automation of ordering and prior authorization processes for medical services and equipment through the adoption of standardized templates, data elements, and real-time-based electronic transactions among all the players. Any workflow utilized to support the prior authorization should auto-generate editable content to document in the process note or visit note the medical necessity so that clinicians don't have to redocument what they just did to justify the prior authorization request. All insurance coverage will be identified and related support provided for coordination of benefits. For example, verification of insurance coverage eligibility, also known as the 270-271, is completed and supports ongoing coordination of benefit activities. Information required for recommendations and decision-making should be provided one time by the source whenever possible. So when we think about a patient and a provider working together to figure out what's next, they need to have all that information up front as quickly as possible from the payer source. Our work should focus on automating prior authorization through Health IT and focus on what information can be exchanged to make any coverage decision better, faster, more transparent. This avoids the thornier issues of dynamic decisions of what is covered and why not. This is about keeping ourselves at the right level in our point of view and commentary as the task force to actually make the changes that we think we can make. Ultimately, we're really trying to get to collect once and reuse as referenced in our charge, and this will also aid public health and research efforts. We want to increase end-to-end automation for processing prior auth, data requests, and response using recognized standards. And I wondered earlier if we also, not just standards, and code set values for responding. I think from earlier that was brought up that I think we need to talk about. And I'm just going to color code that so I know to come back to it. Number 10, protect continuity of care for patients who are on an ongoing active treatment or stable treatment regimen when there are changes in coverage, health insurance providers, or prior auth requirements. Workflow practices include triggers for expiring prior authorizations to prompt renewal activities if applicable. Greater use of clinical decision support tools, accountable care models, and consensus-based guidelines to reduce the volume of prior authorization requests while increasing the value of responses and shared treatment decision-making. Provider and payer systems can supply procedural, pharmacy, or device-specific requirements and information needs to complete prior authorization processing. And the integration of the clinical EHR and administrative PMS workflows will occur. 14 items in the category of real-time data capture and workflow automation. Comments, thoughts? Carol?
No, no one with their hand raised right now. Oh, we have one. Jocelyn?
Yes, please.
I'd love to just understand a little bit the point eight a little bit better about reusing data that's collected once. Do you mean inside of the PA process itself? Because I do think that sort of the statement around reusing existing clinical data by a payer that could be used to deny a claim, I think could raise agita and blood pressure for folks out in the industry.
This is Arian. I think this came from some talk that we had that was related to potentially some COVID-19 related items. But out of that came the notion that these administrative processes can also be used, again, in the point of process improvement, research relative to EPA, research relative to workflow and burden, that is a valuable data asset. The metadata flowing off these processes are valuable data assets.
Totally agree. I think it's a really important point. I'm just raising that maybe the language might need to be spelled out a bit further, because it's often a barrier we run into when we're actually trying to implement.
So we are currently talking prior authorization, but I do think it has the broader implications that we want to think about how do we capture it once and reuse it, which has some really strong workflow implications. And so do you want to talk a little bit, Jocelyn, about what kind of, like, do you think we shouldn't be carrying this through beyond prior auth?
We actually had pretty extensive conversation on the DaVinci side within, we created a clinical advisory council this past fall. Where that foundational guiding principles document really came from. And we had very robust discussion. It was actually really positive around the ability to reuse, and that all of that agreement should be up at the contract level and not at the data permissioning level. And I would classify it potentially as like a trigger issue. I think when you talk to people that are hands-on informaticists inside provider organizations and payer organizations, they understand collecting once and reusing is a really good thing to do. But I think getting people sort of to the party, it becomes a big divisive issue.
Yeah.
So this is Anil. Can I just add, I think the context of this when we were discussing it was around the presentation on the electronic report form, and that we wouldn't want to recreate any standards for getting additional data within the workflow, that we should reuse any existing standards for collecting additional data PA so that we would leverage existing standards. I don't recall in our small work group, Alex and team, don't recall any conversation about reusing data, because I think it's a very thorny issue and could change the way that clinicians enter information if they believed it would be used for other purposes. So I just want to make sure that at least the conversations I recall are around the technology that was presented during the COVID-19 conversations around the, I think from the CDC, around the electronic report form and how it would be injected into the EHR. I was thinking, and I think we were discussing, how that could be reused in the context of PA so we didn't have yet another mechanism for data collection.
We did, in fact, you're spot on, but there was, yes, we did talk about it specifically when we were going through the other considerations and recommendations content. There was a very heavy COVID-19 aspect to that, but the concept of collect once and reuse was actually discussed before that and was in the workbook, and so I think it took on a little bit of its own life. I think there are downstream data provenance from a US CDI perspective is intended to be a feature and that we can rely upon to appropriately enable sharing with public health and research as it ties to, I believe, consent management as a policy framework. But I think we need to have some discussion about this, because I think we've got two separate thoughts going on right now, and so I'm interested in the feedback of how people are seeing it.
Yeah, I put a cap on this. This is Anil again. I just think that PA in the context of public health and research may be misplaced here, and we can take it offline into our small work group or hear from others, because it's a broader issue. All the data that's collected in the routine clinical care perhaps should be used and reused for public health and or research, but the PA itself is, I think, what I'm getting hung up on. So. But again, a broader conversation.
Thanks, Anil. And we also have Rich, who has his hand raised. Go ahead, Rich.
Yeah, if you could scroll back up to that, I'm not sure which number it is, but it had 95% approval.
Is that the one you were referring to, Rich?
I think so, yeah. My concern is, why are we only talking approval? I'm struggling a little bit with this because there's two legitimate answers. One is approve and the other is deny. So
I think this is a thinker. We had good discussion yesterday, and I think we all agreed that what we want is determination of the rapid determination of the result, not rapid approval. So, you know, but not a pend, not a check back later, clarity of response.
Right. I'm comfortable with that. Or if you're trying to say, how far did we succeed in moving the needle, that would be okay as well. But if we're talking a steady state, then you got to count negatives as long as it's a definitive answer. Because over time, those that get routinely approved over and over again, the payer's going to take those off the list.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
A couple words came to mind, so I captured that. We'll factor that in. Yes?
Alex, it's Alexis. I was just going to say that I think when we talked about this area, too, we talked about clear and unambiguous denials, which is something that Jim had mentioned earlier on the call today, that needing the information as to why something is denied to be able to, you know, either get a second chance to add information or appeal appropriately.
Yeah, a level, it's Jim Georges here. There is a reason for denial, but it's very generic, and so enough granularity to learn from it or to know what was missing or not met. Absolutely.
Right, exactly.
And I guess I just, when I started to have my phone troubles, I wanted to ask a question, Jim, to you about that, in that it's the standard code values, and I was trying to, if they were remark codes, if that's what they, I can't remember exactly what they're using for responding to a 278 ask, if it's the standardized, like, remark codes, maybe Strickland or someone else on the call can remind me what we use for that, because depending upon which code set value we're using, we might need to think about how we pursue that, because it might be held within a standards body or a corresponding organization, or might need some more work on our part. And I just don't remember who owns that code set that we use to respond, to provide our response on approvals, pens, or denials.
Yeah, I'd love to see the detail, too, to see, because my guess is there's another tier of detail down. I don't know how hard it'll be, but it's important because it may reduce all the cycling.
There's a longstanding history with how specific our responses should be, like on an explanation of benefits, and the industry, you know, kind of talk about some people like to lumpers and other people aren't, like Arian said earlier, that is a world unto itself about remark codes and cart codes and how we handle all of those. So we can take a look into that offline.
And one of the other lenses through which we should look at this is, you know, the notion that the way it currently often works is if there's a inpatient and it's denied, there may be a level of detail that where the payer and the provider can agree that if certain things aren't met, then it becomes an OBS. There could be a rule set that could be driven on the right level of granular data. Otherwise, what happens is it gets thrown into this very manual appeal process. And so one of the notions is that there could be if-then statements generated that both sides could agree on that might actually, you know, substitute the inpatient for the OBS if there's enough granularity that we can agree or define it, for example. And that would decrease the burden on both provider and payer for that appeal process.
Which is extraordinarily costly for everybody.
Oh, my God. You could imagine if we could get granular enough that the provider and payer understood in these situations with this data, if it's not met or that blah, 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 that for this subset, we would just automatically convert it. That could save an enormous amount of trouble. And for anything else, still have the peer review process.
Awesome. Okay, so I've made some additional notes. Are we good? Cheryl, any other hands raised?
Yep. I just want to make a note. It's like 1:17. We have public comment at 20 after, and you still have more to go. Why don't you do this why don't you do till the next section?
Okay.
Or no?
So, sure. Let me do transparency, and then we'll put up the public comment slide and go from there. So the next category of transparency about providers and patients have the information about what events require pre-authorizations upfront and readily available. There'll be transparency as to when a prior auth related policy was last reviewed and the effective dates. So that provides the insight from the provider side of when the payers are maintenancing, so to speak, their prior auth policies. Third is to improve the channels of communication between the health insurance providers, healthcare professionals, and patients to minimize care delays and ensure clarity on prior authorization requirements, rationale, and changes. This is juicy. This will include intra and inter-organizational communication to ensure the data generated by all the transactions are made available to actors to support continuous process improvements. And the final item is a full audit trail should be available to both the patient and the clinician so there's a common source of truth about the status of any prior auth. Any questions on those?
No one's raising their hand so far. So why don't we go to putting up the public comment slide, Lauren, and we can go to public comment, and then when we come back, we can put a hold on this and then pick this up in our next meeting. So I don't think we're going to have time to finish the entire paper.
We are not.
We want to go over next steps also.
Yeah, and what I'm hoping is that folks, we've gotten through fairly far so people can then pick, review this, add their, you all have the Word document in your inbox. You can feel free to mark it up and send it back to me.
That would be a great homework assignment.
Yes.
While we're getting the phone number up to make public comment, I also put that in the chat box. So at this point, we'll ask the operator to open the public line.
Thank you. If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. We will pause for a brief moment to poll for comments. There are no comments at this time.
Thought, Lauren, there was someone who had joined in the beginning that might have a comment. Maybe I saw it wrong, but.
Okay, once again, if you would like to make a comment, please press the star and the 1 on your telephone keypad. I don't have anybody queuing up for a comment.
All right. Okay, Alex, do you want to talk about next steps for the material that you guys presented, and then we can go from there?
Sure thing. Okay, so I just have to make myself a note as to how far we went. So what's going to happen next is that I hope all of you will continue to take a look at the last page and a half of 1, 2, 3, 4. Items, give us any feedback. The small working group will take the feedback from today and additional feedback and incorporate it. We'll go on a wee hiatus while Jackie Munson and I wrangle privacy and security with a handful of you folks, and then come back with hopefully what I will envision is to synthesize all of this information into a succinct vision for what's next, and that we can start to consider what
how we're going to move forward. What I think will be important is to also for this group to await direction from the full task force as we pivot from the prior authorization exemplar to the broader conversation.
Thank you, Alex. And I think, is there someone on the task force that would like to volunteer to be the SME that could work with the individual that Steve Brown had offered to ascertain to develop that inpatient as well as, the med workflow?
Yeah, Jim Dirt is here and Josh can.
Okay. Thank you, Jim and Josh. Steve.
And Gus Gerasi, I volunteered earlier, but I'll add my name again.
And who is that again?
That is Gus.
Gus Gerasi.
Okay,
and
great.
Cheryl, as available, I'm more than happy to participate as well. We've done this over on the MCPDP front a couple times, so I love the idea of moving it into a more, modeling type format.
Love to do it. If one of you guys could just send an introductory email so I get everybody's contacts and stuff, we'll get something going. I'm gonna resource box it, but I think you're gonna like what you see.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm actually in the process of sending Steve a message right now, guys. So I'll just add, it sounds like Gus and Jim and Josh to it.
Wonderful. And I'd love to participate in that meeting, if you don't mind, when you're establishing
sure.
it. Thank you. This is Cheryl Turney.
That's okay. I'm just going to volunteer Josh to wrangle us again. So.
Okay, perfect. All right, sounds great. All right, and then we did also talk about in the prior discussion the making a couple of adjustments to the data classes work and definitions, and I'll work with Josh and Jim offline to see if we can get that information updated. Are there any other things from or suggestions or comments from the participants before we I'll recheck to see if there's any public comments. I see
there are no comments.
Okay, and no public comments. All right, so again, we really do appreciate everybody's participation. I think this was a great meeting today. I think we made a lot of progress. Please do think about the suggestion I made about the data model, and we can add that as a topic to talk about next time when we're talking a little bit more, reviewing our progress on the three work groups that we're going to have now, actually four, because we're adding the new data model or process model. So that will be another update that we'll have. And if we have no other final questions or comments, I just want to thank everybody for today and hope you have a wonderful week and a great holiday weekend.
Well said. It's hard to believe it's Memorial Day already.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Take care, everybody.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Great job. Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.